The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to the 12th edition of The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. This episode is being released on International Women's Day 2023, March 8th. You know, everyone has a different relationship to this day. Some people love it. Some people don't care for it. Some people don't mark it. Some people don't understand why we have it. For me, it represents a couple of things. It's a day to celebrate the strides being made in gender equality. It's sometimes hard to feel optimistic about that, but things are changing for the better in the world. True. But it is also a day to take stock of where things are not where they should be. And when I look at hockey through this lens specifically, I see these two sides. You know, sometimes it feels like hockey and the NHL are moving at a glacial speed when it comes to diversity and the inclusion of women. When I compare the NHL to other leagues, it is undoubtedly behind. But things are starting to change, slowly but surely. There are 6 women assistant GMs. The Sharks have a black GM. There's lots more diversity in player development. That is obvious. It's happening. But it seems like coaching ranks have been really the last to catch up. That's not okay. I don't think it's okay. And neither does NHL Coaches Association President Lindsay Pennell. Well, Lindsay decided to do something about it. And there is stuff happening. So here's my interview with the force of nature that is Lindsay Pennell. Lindsay, it is very nice to see you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's great to see you too.
You have been so very busy. And of course, I want to get to all the work you're doing with the Coaches Association because it's so important. But I want to talk about your personal path first, because it's a little bit, you know, when I sort of read your bio and look at your path, you and I did not take the same route to hockey, but we both kind of came from a little bit of the outside into hockey. So I'm curious about, your route to here.
That's a big question, but you're right. Neither of us, as much as I know about you, played hockey at any professional level. I certainly never coached any hockey. My background was in the investment business. I spent the first decade of my career in finance. I went to business school. I'm a huge self-proclaimed math nerd, so finance for me was awesome. I worked at very entrepreneurial firms for the first 10 years of my career, where I had to wear many different hats and touch many different parts of the business, everything from marketing to sales to investor relations and communications, even the operations side and the legal and compliance side of it all, and then working directly with, you know, the C-suite executives, our CEO and, you know, chief investment officer and all the big wigs. And so I learned a ton about business and just how different areas in a company work. And I loved it. I loved never having to be stuck in one lane, you know, just one role. And this is your job and just do this, rinse and repeat day in and day out. I'm way too curious to just be told to do one thing. I'm always wondering how everything fits together and works together. And so, you know, I did the finance gig for about a decade. And then one day just woke up and was like, is this what I'm doing for the rest of my life? Like, I have had a lot of success at it. I was VP of a billion-dollar firm before the age of 30. So it was probably a bit shocking to a lot of my peers at that time that I was willing to walk away from the industry, but I just knew there had to be something out there for me that I was excited to jump out of bed in the morning and get to do. And you know, there's a few years of searching for what that was led me to some time in California, which I loved, and ultimately it led me to the NHL Coaches Association.
Which, I mean, it's such an interesting transition, or at least it sort of looks like that on paper. Because, I mean, I grew up a hockey fan. Were you a hockey fan growing up? Like, did you, was it kind of coursing through your blood as a Canadian?
I hate to admit it. I feel like a bad Canadian, but it wasn't coursing through my blood. You know, I grew up in Toronto. And so, you know, you watch the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's hard to live in Toronto and not follow the Leafs. And especially when I was in high school, you know, they were getting past the first round of the playoffs. So it was an exciting time to kind of be a Leafs fan in the city then. So I was around it. But you know, I wouldn't call myself a diehard hockey fan by any means. So yeah, I really did sort of backwards stumble into this role, but you know, what I don't have in coaching knowledge, I'm fortunate to be surrounded by 200 NHL coaches who have all of that knowledge. So as long as I can figure out what I need to extract from them, and fill in the rest from the business side, we've got a pretty good gig going here.
Well, you know, I'm probably going to jump around because what occurs to me now is it's actually a really progressive to look to hire somebody who's outside of the hockey business. And in fact, we don't think of hockey looking outside of hockey spaces. So it seems to me that hiring you was actually outside the box, I think, when it in hockey terms. Right?
It definitely was. Yeah. So I first started with the NHL Coaches Association in the fall of 2016. So right at the beginning of the 2016-17 season. And they had being the executive committee of the association at the time, hired Michael Hirschfeld, our executive director. And Mike and I had worked together for 8 years in the investment business. So we went way back, and mm-hmm. he brought me on day one to help support him too. And so full credit due where it's due to the NHL coaches on the executive committee that said, we want to look outside of hockey. We, you know, we're a group of hockey and like-minded people. We need a difference of opinions. We need business acumen to come in here and run our association and run our group. And so, you know, full props to them for recognizing that, you know, 7 years ago, and bringing Mike and myself in too. And you're right, you know, they brought in Mike from outside of the business world, but they chose me to be a female leader in the organization too, which, you know, 7-8 years ago wasn't being done a lot.
Mm-hmm. So the description may be different now than it was when you first joined the association, but what do they actually do?
The Coaches Association represents all of the 200 active coaches, so head coach, assistant, goaltending, and video coach, and we support them with everything non-hockey operations, we call. So we're never getting involved with lines or anything like that, but mm-hmm. we do all the stuff behind the scenes. So their contracts and their salaries, their pensions, their health benefits. We help with a lot of cross-border issues. As you know, coaches are fired and hired between Canada and the U.S. There's a lot of travel logistics that go along with that. So we support them in that sense. But beyond that, we, as mandated by our coaches, have the goal to develop the next generation of NHL coach. And so through that, we have a number of different programs. And obviously, being a woman myself, you know, I wondered where all of the female coaches were in hockey. And so we have a few diversity programs that we're running as well to help cultivate the next generation of coach.
Okay. So we'll hop right to that. So I know you became the president in 2019, and that was the same year that at the Vancouver NHL draft, there's a global coaches clinic. I was actually, I think I facilitated a panel during that. You had what you call an aha moment. So what did that look like?
Yeah, it truly was one of those light bulb moments. I felt like I was in a cartoon. So it was back in Vancouver at draft. I was on the stage with my business partner, Mike, giving the opening remarks and looking out on a crowd of 500 plus hockey coaches. And I'm not joking. I think there was maybe 5 women in the audience. And for me, I was like, this doesn't make sense. It's not representative of society. I don't think it's representative of hockey to that extreme of a level. And so, you know, we walked away from that event, and I spent the summer trying to be connected with as many women coaching in Canada and in the US as I could to hear from them firsthand what they felt the barriers to career advancement was for them, whether or not they even wanted to coach in the NHL ultimately, just in general. You know, what were the societal misconceptions they were facing? What were the hurdles to them being able to move for a job or to take that next step? And from probably about 50 hours of those conversations, the foundation for what I felt could be a really beneficial program started to take shape in my mind. And so soon after that, it was March 2020, we announced the launch of the NHLCA Female Coaches Development Program on International Women's Day. And as we all know, what happens next, 4 days later, the world shuts down because of the pandemic. So we had to retool, you know, what my original brainchild was for the program from a much more intensive in-person to a virtual sort of format. But we pivoted and we were nimble and we're quick. And we're now about to conclude in the next couple of months, year three of the program.
Okay. So when you did all that reconnaissance, you talked to these women coaches and you talked about barriers to entry. I mean, what was your takeaway basically?
A lot of the similarities are what you'd find in any industry. Honestly, it's like societal misconceptions about being a woman, you know, being at home with your family and not being able to commit fully to the workforce. Like that was a big one I heard. You know, maybe the women were the secondary job in their household. And so they didn't have the option to relocate for a more elevated coaching role, right? And all those things are required if you want to be coaching at the highest levels. You know, you have to pick up on a dime's notice and move across the country or to a different country. And so I heard some of those sort of challenges. The other one was, you know, lack of financial resources. It's expensive to get certified and to keep up your certification and to be going to clinics and to be networking. And so the financial access was a big barrier as well.
What was the reaction when you started to, you know, try to move the needle? What was the reaction from the establishment side? Those, you know, 496 faces looking at you who are all male. What's their level of receptivity, I guess, to bringing women in? Because looking from the outside in, it feels hard to crack because of that also.
I think it's hard to get your foot in the door. It definitely is. But the reception that I've had, honestly, since we launched the program, and this is from our NHL coaches, is like, come on in. What can I teach you? What do you want to know? How can I help? Like this program wouldn't be wrapping up year three if we didn't have the full support of all of our NHL coaches and our actually American Hockey League coaches too have been really helpful in terms of leading different networking sessions. So I'm fortunate that I have, you know, an arsenal of 350 NHL and AHL coaches who are willing to help support in kind of whatever I ask. You know, whatever society thinks about the program, that's for them. I think, you know, if you're behind the times and you don't think women deserve a place here, that's a bigger fight than I need to worry about. I've got, you know, the support of the NHL and Kim Davis and her whole team there have been incredibly helpful with us getting this program going, connecting us in with women, you know, in areas of the country that I otherwise wouldn't have been connected with, and helping to shine a spotlight on the women too, actually, as we are going through Women's History Month this March. We'll be spotlighting all of the women in the program on our social channels and with the NHL support too, just getting their stories out into the media so people start to see it as a normal thing that women are coaching. And not just women coaching women, but women coaching men. You know, there's the first female full-time video coach in the NHL. There's the first full-time assistant coach in the AHL, Emily and Jess respectively. And those are huge barriers that have been broken in the past couple of years. And I'm so proud that they've been members of our program. And, you know, if we've played a 1% role in their success, like that's a huge win for us. And I know there's just more to come. Like there's been a lot of achievements that we've had over the past few years. And it kind of feels like the tidal wave has crested and it's about to crash and we're all coming.
Well, I certainly hope so. I can't wait to see the first woman behind an NHL bench as a coach. But yes, I absolutely make note of these women who are cracking the glass ceiling. And as for, you know, society, I say that in quotes. I mean, it's really just Twitter, you know, and it like you turn it off and it's not there. So what's important is the work that you're able to do internally and how receptive people are. If people become involved in the female coaching program, what do they do? What do they get? What kind of programs are offered?
Yeah. So the program right now consists of 80 women, primarily in North America, although we have a couple coaches in Europe and one actually in Australia as well. And really there's three objectives for the program. So the first is networking. like I've heard day in and day out from our NHL coaches, they wouldn't be where they are without knowing who they knew. And it's, you know, somebody from 10 years, 20 years ago in their career, that's now helping them get that next job. And so the networking component is really core for these women, and being able to connect them directly to our NHL coaches and exchange contact info and stay in touch. It's, you know, that's how Dan Bylsma got in touch with Jessica Campbell originally, was through the program. So the first pillar is all about networking. The second is skills development. So, you know, you need to know your stuff as a hockey coach, but that's not just the X's and O's. It's the soft skills. It's communication. It's how do you build your leadership group. It's the ethos of the locker room that you want to have, right? So bringing in either our NHL coaches to talk to, you know, X's and O's, or whatever it may be, or third party presenters to talk on communication and PR tactics and how to manage the media. Like all of those are resources that many of the coaches in our program would never have access to. And then the third pillar is all about visibility and exposure. So, you know, I touched on our spotlights on social media and what the NHL is able to support with there, but just getting them opportunities to tell their story, to be front and center as a female in the NHL, in the AHL, in the wherever they are coaching, and just tell their story and start to normalize it more. So those are the three pillars of what the program is founded upon. And then we have monthly meetings. We meet on Zoom every month, the whole group, we get together. There's different, you know, sessions that follow those three sort of pillars. We do supplemental meetings. We do a lot of like cool stuff, like call it a fly on the wall, where I have an NHL coaching staff set up a bunch of Zoom cameras in their coaching room. And we sit in and watch a coaching staff meeting during training camp, and then do a check-in a couple months later, mid-season, to see what's developing, and just exposing the women to the conversations that are being had at the NHL level, I think provides two things. One, they see actually what's being talked about at the highest levels, but two, they realize that the conversations they're having with their players, if they're like a college coach, for example, are pretty much the same as what, you know, Dave Quinn there is saying to the San Jose Sharks. It's the same message. And I think that builds a lot of confidence for these women. It is realizing that they already have those skills. So they should feel comfortable and confident putting their name forward for opportunities and just in living in this world of men's professional hockey.
I know that you took part in the Maritime Junior Hockey League program also. So they're doing something similar, not just for coaches, but women who are interested in entering into all kinds of facets of hockey. What else are you seeing kind of out there in the hockey world? How is this growth being demonstrated?
I think everybody has the right mindset that, I'm using quotes, they want to do something, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody realizes that we need to change, and they're, for the most part, what I've seen, on board to support women in whatever side of hockey it is, coaching, scouting, front office. And everybody's trying to do something, which is great, because it just takes somebody doing the first step for the snowball to start building, to get momentum, and for more people and partners and money to come into it to advance everyone. So the Maritime Junior Hockey League coaching and scouting program is one. I know the Canadian Junior Hockey League as well has a program going on too, that's more at the top level, kind of pushing out. And then you look at all of the corporate partners in the hockey space as well. Like Bauer's been hugely instrumental supporting diversity, not just women, but from the BIPOC community as well, and other underrepresented areas of hockey. And so I think it's everybody doing their individual part to collectively make a difference. So the more things I see happening out there, the more excited I am. Like whoever views it as, well, they're doing this program, why do we have to do it? Like, that's the wrong mindset. Just do something, do whatever you can do. And, you know, that's kind of the mentality I had when we first started this program. We had zero budget to put towards it, but I had my time, and I'm like, I will commit myself to doing something. And when I first started, I had no idea what that looked like. And now here we are with 80 women that we're supporting and milestones achieved. And it's just been so fulfilling and exciting to see, I think, what the possibilities in the runway ahead are.
Okay. So 2019, you saw five, you know, women's faces in the crowd. What's the 2023 Global Coaching Clinic going to look like then?
I hope more than five. I hope at least 50. So we've extended free access to all of the women in our program to come. Right. So, you know, if they can get themselves to Nashville, we'd love for them to be our guests. So hopefully that's, you know, one small role we can play in their coaching development and removing some financial barriers too. But I think just spreading the word more and more that women have a space here, that they're welcomed, and they're not just welcomed by me, because me saying it is one thing, but mm-hmm. being welcomed by our NHL coaches and their peers is so important. And so I'm excited to see when we're in Nashville at the draft this year, kind of what the composition looks like. We've just opened registration about a month ago, and we're ticking along. We're almost 70% sold out. So if you are out there and you want to join, here's a little plug for our annual coaches conference. We'll have 100 of our NHL coaches and probably another 50 AHL coaches out in Nashville on June 28th for that event.
You know, we talked about how receptive the association was to bringing you on, but I know what it's like to walk into, let's say at the draft, an arena full of, you know, almost entirely men. Did you feel barrier to entry in this world, or were you really just immediately like, okay, we need you, here you go?
Yeah, I think because my background was in finance, which is also a men's world and an old boys club, I didn't know any different. Like, I started in a male-dominated industry right out of university, and I haven't known anything different. And so I can say with full confidence, I never felt intimidated to be in a room with our NHL coaches. They are all, you know, incredible human beings. What I think the fan sees on the TV or during pressers and all that stuff is, you know, the coach, and they have their forward facing persona, but behind the scenes, when we're working with them on this program or really anything that we're doing within the association, they're giving me so much confidence that I of course deserve to be here, that I'm adding value, I'm making their lives easier. And so, yeah, I understand why it would be intimidating to be in a room of all men, but I think just, I kind of got thrown into the men's world right from the get-go. And so I don't know any different. I'm also not one to ever be made to feel like I don't belong somewhere. If I feel I should be there, I know I'm going to add value, and that's really just build the confidence to be there.
Well, you have made so many positive shifts. Let's talk about, as you say, another underrepresented group. There's a BIPOC coaching program as well. So what's that comprised of?
Yeah. So same idea as our female coaches program, in the sense that, you know, we need to focus on networking, on skills development, and building visibility and exposure for our group of BIPOC coaches. There's currently in the NHL only two Black coaches and a handful of Asian and other BIPOC identifying coaches. So there's some who are there, but not nearly enough. Mm-hmm. And so right now we have 65 coaches in that program, again, across North America, a few in Europe, one also in Australia. And we're supporting them with all of the same resources that our female coaches programs get. So, you know, we've invited them to come to the draft as well, to our clinic down there. We hold monthly meetings. We have all these supplemental sessions. We're running along the same trajectory as we are with the female coaches, just a different program, because there are, you know, different challenges that those in the BIPOC community face than what women face. The interesting thing for me is, you know, in our female coaches program, there are several Black women. Mm-hmm. And when we were onboarding them, we said, you know, would you prefer to be in the female coaches program or in the BIPOC group? And they all said, you know, I do obviously want to be connected with our BIPOC coaches in that program, but as a woman, I also have all of these other hurdles and challenges too. So I want to be surrounded by my sisters, so I can hear what they're saying and we can, you know, fight the good fight together. So from those conversations, this year, when we started the year three of the program in September, we actually combined our monthly meetings from both groups so that everybody now is together into one meeting, so they can meet their peers in the other program and network and connect and learn from each other too. So that was a big change, and I think a really beneficial one. It's funny, the coaching community, because everybody knows everybody or is like 2 degrees of separation away. And so it's been really fun to see people, you know, reunited after not seeing each other for 10 years or 15 years and, you know, moved away, and now they're back together and on monthly Zooms and just reconnecting. It's awesome.
you said, you know, the tidal wave you feel is about to crash. When, you know, I mean, listen, I love hockey. You love hockey, but both of us have been, you know, very transparent about knowing that the NHL is behind other leagues in some ways. In the NFL, you see women on the sidelines as coaches. In baseball, there's even a GM in baseball. When are we going to see something visibly shift in hockey, do you think?
I wish I knew the answer to the question I think you're asking, which is, when will there be a woman behind an NHL?
Sure.
And look, I can manifest that, I'd say now, but I can't manifest it. So let's say within the next handful of years, whether that's 2, 3, or 4. But I think the bigger question is, where are all of the women or BIPOC coaches coming from? Because you touched on it, like the other professional sports leagues have women coaching, more women in front office roles. But I think on the coaching side specifically, it's because the developmental leagues also have a lot of women there. Whereas right. in hockey, when you look at the pathway to the NHL, whether it's through the NCAA or through the USHL or the ECHL, there aren't women in the men's side of those areas. And mm-hmm. so until we've built a pipeline of qualified women there, there's not going to be a steady flow of them to be going into the NHL. You have to know your stuff. You can't just jump from coaching 10-year-olds to the NHL. It's just not possible, whether you're a man or woman, right? And so,
well, unless you're Marty St. Louis, but that doesn't.
I was going to say, or you have a stellar playing career, in which case, yeah. So I think that's a big focus for me in the short term, is ensuring that we're helping these women, supporting them in their journey in their hockey careers, but backfilling all of the developmental leagues, because that ultimately is what's going to flow up to the NHL. And so we've run a number of different sessions from some of our NHL coaches who came from those areas. You know, we had one with Dave Quinn talking about the NCAA and his pathway mm-hmm. to the NHL through that. We had one with Jeff Blashill talking about, you know, USA Hockey and the USHL and his pathway there. And so just, I think, helping share those stories and have transparency and open dialogue gives women the, you know, sight of line. Is that the expression?
Line of sight.
There you go. Should have been doing this first thing after my coffee. Gives them the line of sight to, like, okay, well, there is a pathway I can follow along. Cause sometimes the biggest challenge is not knowing where to take your next step. Mm.
Do you have, conversations, affiliations with those leagues that you're talking about, so that, you know, you can better kind of stoke the pipeline, as it were?
We do. So one of the first things I did once we announced the program back in March 2020 was go out to all of the commissioners of the leagues and say, look, like, we're starting these programs. We need to be able to share job openings with the women in our program. And so we've gone to all of them. So, you know, I'm not saying it's 100% track record, but when there is an opening, we're posting it on our internal job board for the women to see, or we're distributing it to all of them to say, look, if you want this opportunity, if you feel you're qualified, throw your name into the hat. And hopefully, you know, you get a first interview and at least go through that process. Mm-hmm. And so we've had some success there. Like, since we've been running the program, there's the first female full-time skills coach in the ECHL. We have a full-time assistant coach in the North American Hockey League. So there are some tangible wins mm-hmm. that have come out of building relationships with those organizations. And actually the same with many of the European ice hockey federations too. We do a lot of work with those organizations to help support their coaches. We're actually teaming up with the NHL for Hockey Day in Czechia and Hockey Day in Finland coming up in March, and running some seminars there. So even connecting the women in with those European federations is another opportunity, right, to just continue to learn and have more career opportunities.
There's so much work to do, obviously, and you're doing it. Is there another frontier that you think really needs cracking open?
Yeah. So I mentioned we launched the program, and it was really just my time to be running it. And we've had a lot of success, and the feedback from the women has been incredible. But I think the next element is getting the clubs involved so that we can start doing more in-person work mm-hmm. with the women and with the BIPOC coaches in our program too. And so last development camp, we actually piloted a guest coach diversity mentorship program with four NHL teams where they brought in one or two women or BIPOC coaches from our program for their development camp. And they were on the ice with the players and shadowing the coaches, building those networks, getting exposure to the GM and the AGMs. And it was invaluable. And so I think all of the stakeholders in those pilot programs said it was a resounding success. And I'm hopeful that, you know, what was four last Dev Camp will be 14 this coming one in July, and, you know, all 32 the following year. I don't see why there isn't a reason that that's something that we can achieve in the short term.
How many people work with you? I mean, just actually, like, you know, work for the NHL yeah. Coaches Association, because I mean, it sounds, you're doing so much. It's so impressive.
Oh, well, thank you. There's myself as our president. We have Mike Hirschfeld, who's our executive director. And I brought on a marketing manager to help me about a year and a half ago. So there you go.
That is okay. That's, I mean, a staff of three, really. That's crazy.
I mentioned how I wore many hats early on in my career, and it's served me well in this role now, because I do everything from, you know, partnership sales to event management to running our programs to doing our communications and marketing. But that's what I love about my job. I'm never doing the same thing every day. It's always different. And I'm happy to even be able to talk to you and share about the work we're doing, because I think a lot of it is kind of behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, the women or the people who are close to our association know what we're doing, but the broader hockey community may not. So just being able to talk about it and share the story and get the word about these women and the BIPOC coaches out is awesome.
Yeah, it's incredible the work that you've done and continue to do. Lindsay, before I let you go, you sent me an email when I first moved to the Bay Area, and you said, you got to say hi to Dave Quinn for me. He's a great guy. So what's your experience with him?
Dave Quinn is a great guy. And I don't know if he's going to shoot me for saying this, but his neighbor is Taylor Swift, not in San Jose, back in home where he lives in the off season. And
what?
I'm Are just like, serious? Okay, I'm a huge Swiftie. How can I meet Taylor Swift through Dave Quinn? So anyway, that's like on my personal bucket list for the next few years to figure out. But in all seriousness, I'm sorry, Dave, don't hate me. In all seriousness, he is one of the best. Like, anything I've ever needed to do and needed his support on, he's like, whatever you need, Linz. Yep. I'm here. Sure. Need to do a seminar. Need me to network. Anything. Like, and honestly, that's what I hear from all of these guys. Let's, you know, I'm also not asking for them to do it during the playoffs, you know, granted, but, so yeah, to bring it back, Dave's a great guy. And I hope that you have a chance to get to know him while you're down there in San Jose.
Well, he's been, you know, nothing but gracious with the press, and goodness knows he does not have an easy task here, but he really is handling it beautifully. And yeah, he's a lot of fun to be around. So I'll give him your regards, because I'll see him pretty soon. But Lindsay, really, thank you for all the work that you're doing. It really means so much. I'm going to leave you with this sort of final query, as we're in Women's History Month, Gender Equality Month, International Women's Day. Do you kind of take stock at a time like this? And I don't know, like, how do you take stock, maybe, is a better question.
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that question. I find it takes moments like this where you're asked, have you taken stock, to actually take stock. So thank you. I also just had a birthday. And so I think milestones like that sort of make you pause and reflect. So yeah, I feel really grateful, I think, is the word I'd use, about where I'm at, you know, personally and professionally with the association and what we've been able to achieve thus far. The other word I'd use is excited, because I think we're on the precipice of many more great things to come.
Well, I know it to be true, and I am so grateful that you took the time out. I know you're a very, very busy person. Now I know exactly how busy. So Lindsay, thank you for this.
Always have time for you, Tara. Thanks for having me.
So a couple of things I want to add to this. First of all, Lindsay Pennell is truly a remarkable woman with boundless energy, I can't believe that she is doing this with her staff of three combined. So amazing, amazing work. I actually had the chance to meet Emily Engel-Natsky, who is the video coordinator with the Washington Capitals. The Caps were in town playing the San Jose Sharks on March 4th. We won't talk about the result of that game. Wasn't great. But Emily told me that she actually sought Lindsay and the Female Development Coaches Program out, and that she wasn't initially part of it, but she reached out to Lindsay and asked to be part of it. And it was shortly after that that she landed her AHL job in Hershey and then got the job with the Washington Capitals. So anybody out there who feels like they could use this kind of support in the coaching world, I think just go ahead and reach out to Lindsay and ask how you can be involved. And second of all, I just want to throw a name out there. I also don't think it's going to be too long till we see a woman in the NHL coaching ranks behind the bench. And the name that's kind of being bandied about is Corey Cheverie. Corey is from New Glasgow, Nova Scotia. She's an assistant coach with the Ryerson Rams. So she was the first woman to be hired on a men's coaching staff at a Canadian university hockey program. She's a coach with the Canadian women's national team, and she's also worked behind the bench as an assistant with the under-18s men's. So, you know, there are names out there. There are women out there who are, who really tick all the boxes when it comes to coaching. So I really have my fingers crossed for 2023-24. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I'll be back next week with another edition of The Undercurrent. In the meantime, keep your fins above water.